And welcome to another brand new spanking episode of Who's to Review. I'm your host, Tom Denham, and I'm joined by
Ben Holt. G'day.
And today we will be reviewing The Curse of Fenric, which is story 2 of season 26, the last season of Classic Doctor Who.
That's right. It's a bit of a shame that it was the last series of Classic Doctor Who, but gee, what a note to go out on, because I personally love this series, like looking at Battlefield, Survival, Ghostlight, which you and I discussed
We just watched in the last episode.
If you listen to last week's episode, we did discuss Ghostlight, probably a little bit briefer than I would have liked, but that's okay. We're going to make it up this week, because The Curse of Fenric was written by none other than Ian Briggs,
who also wrote Dragonfire, and you've also seen that one, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I particularly enjoyed it quite a lot. I liked the fact that it was a story where we had Mel and Ace.
Yeah. And what did you think of the villain in that story?
It's a bit out there from memory. Yeah, it was a bit crazy, but probably not as good as the ones
this
in this
one.
Today.
Yeah. This is the real.
This is the real.
This
deal,
is the gold nugget. I think a lot of people say. I have heard a lot of people say that this is one of the best classic era Doctor Who stories, and for good reasons as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's just an absolute classic. And I shouted at you when we were watching this episode. I said, "Zombies in Doctor Who." It turned out they weren't quite zombies, though, were they?
It had a zombie kind of element to it. But
insane, crazy. Yeah,
because you're a massive fan of The Walking Dead as well.
Well, I went off that in recent years, but even so, I was a bit excited to see them pop up in Doctor Who.
It's always good fun to see a zombie.
Oh, it was great. So, for those who may not have seen the episode or need a refresher, I'll go through the story. When the Doctor and Ace arrive at a secret military base during World War II, they discover that a centuries-old Viking curse is bringing terror to its inhabitants. As hideous vampires rise from the sea and Russian commandos begin to close in, they are confronted not only with the mystery from the distant past, but also a terrifying vision of mankind's future. Tom, where do we begin to describe this episode?
Well, sorry, I have to make the disclaimer before that. We said in the last episode that Ghostlight was the season opener when it's in fact Battlefield. And this is story 3 of season 26. So this is the penultimate story.
That's right. Luckily, it's only our second show. So I think a couple of mistakes like that we can get away with.
Hopefully we can let this one slide.
Oh, hopefully you'll forgive us. But can you blame us? I mean, how exciting was this story? Let's be honest.
Oh, it was literally just filled with utter delight, brutal delight, but completely, it was a joyous occasion.
It certainly was. Now, I mentioned about my love for the fact that we had zombies or those sea creatures, but I've always had the theory that every great episode of Classic Doctor Who has to have a priest. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's becoming a common occurrence within the McCoy era, especially like in Remembrance of the Daleks. We have the priest, his name escapes me at the moment, but he has an appearance.
And he was quite strong in that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have this one, and there's a numerous amount in the new series as well. So, yeah. It's something that definitely crops up every now and again. But do you reckon there's a theme behind that? Or?
It's always hard to say, you know, like faith, religion,
power,
different bits and pieces. It always seems to fit in with the story quite well.
Yeah, I guess one of the advantages of using priesthood or religion within a story is that they're kind of portrayed as the foreseer of like what is going to happen, almost like the story's fortune teller. So
it's a good way
it's interesting where it's placed, whereas in some other forms of pop cultural media they're displayed as like a loony is going, "Oh, the doomsday's coming and it's judgment day." But in this vein,
you don't feel that here though, do you?
No.
They never feel silly or as like a weird kind of crazy man. They're just
normal. They've got a purpose.
They do have a purpose.
And the priest in this story, he really, he's one of his key roles in the story. He helps a lot with the translation of the Viking writing on the wall.
That's a big theme.
And that obviously tells us what Fenric is doing and how he comes back from the dead and how the Hemivores come up. And Yeah.
And I must say, when discussing an episode, you have to talk about your favourite performance.
Mm.
And generally, I don't like to say Sylvester McCoy or Sophie Aldred.
Because they've been very good this season.
Absolutely, yeah. Because they're always consistently fantastic. So I always more try to focus on the side characters. And I must say, Nicholas Parsons as the priest just knocked it out of the park.
He was so good.
I must say, and when we were watching it, you heard me laughing very loudly when he had the candlestick.
Yes.
And he was just whacking those creatures at the door.
Oh, wow.
God, I could not stop laughing. I thought that was just fantastic stuff. So, I mean, that's certainly one thing that I particularly loved about this story. And
I think my standout performances, I think these ones were quite unnoticed for a lot of the story, but they were there. The two girls who had come from London, Jean and Phyllis, they were just these kind of scoundrels at the start of it, and the woman who was looking after them where they went to...
The crazy lady, right?
And where they went to the lake, she was going, "Hey,
that's right.
Your hearts will be blackened for the rest of your lives."
Oh, she was fantastic. "You naughty girls!"
Yes.
Yeah, I thought she was just excellent.
But their performance was really held up, and it really became a part of the ensemble of the story. And pretty much everyone's performance in this story was top notch.
That's right. Yeah. There were a lot of parts that made this machine work in this episode, I think.
Yeah.
But those girls certainly contributed to it quite a lot.
And they were in all four parts as well. So,
they were, right from the start. Gee, they looked scary, didn't they?
Once
they turned off.
They're kind of vampire-rific.
Wouldn't want to
kind of look.
Meet them in a dark alley or anything.
And how
like
they
that.
Kind of. There's that scene where the Russian soldier, they lure him into the water and they're just kind of playing with the surface of the water, going, "Come in, we're not telling you to come in. You can come in if you want to." And then they turn him into a vampire as well.
Oh,
so.
Gosh, it was that scene was a bit uncomfortable, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit
eerie. But.
And their death scene as well, spoiler alert.
There will be spoilers in these episodes
for those
who haven't seen it, but we kind of, you can't review an episode without spoiling it a little bit, surely.
Yeah, but the way that those two characters were killed off was just horrific. Oh. It kind of had you on the edge of your seat going, is this appropriate for Doctor
Who?
It
was very morbid at the end. That image is still in my mind
of
how they departed in the episode. Oh, gosh. Crazy stuff.
One of the funny bits of trivia in this episode is Sylvester McCoy's coat, his duffel coat that he wears. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Oh, well, you actually informed me of this. When they were filming, it was too cold when he was outside.
Yeah.
In a lot of the exterior shots. Excuse me. So he actually asked whether he could wear this coat, and they allowed it for the filming of the actual episode. So.
And it works really well with his costume as
well.
I agree.
Yeah. I think it worked beautifully, like for how he was dressed in all the episodes. It didn't look out of place.
They need to make an action figure for that costume, I think.
You'd buy that right away.
I'll buy
you?
That, yeah. I only really buy the Doctor action figures, but still need to get John Hurt and Peter Capaldi, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, in good time. I couldn't imagine how many action figures a Sylvester McCoy Curse of Fenric coat. it just doesn't scream money to me, but no. I'm not sure. Who knows?
There'll be a number of people who would purchase that.
If Curse
of Fenric was their favourite story and Sylvester McCoy was their favourite doctor,
yeah.
They go, "Oh, I love that coat, that duffel coat.
Oh,
I'm going to buy it."
Just one of the many crazy things about this episode, and one thing you expressed multiple times, is how much you like the score. Now, who did that score?
That was done by Mark Ayres, who's he's played a few roles in Doctor Who, as well as doing the music for the McCoy era. He's become a bit of a music historian for especially old school Doctor Who, so we're talking Hartnell and Trout and all of the stuff by the Radiophonic Workshop, who are the original composers, along with Dilly, Derbyshire and Ron Grainer. He uncovered a lot of stuff that they worked on, and he's working with the Radiophonic Workshop today, doing live performances of the music from the Radiophonic Workshop. And yeah, it's wicked.
Oh, he did awesome here, because half the issue that I've had personally watching a lot of these McCoy episodes is, while it was near the tail end of the 1980s, a lot of it did sound a little bit cheesy, I found, some of the soundtracks.
Some of the Kev McCulloch stuff.
Especially in Delta and the Bannerman, that music was just a bit whack and it's over a bit the top.
Jarring, yeah.
It is quite jarring over time. Whereas I found this, it was a lot more...
It sat well with what was going on.
Yeah, definitely.
And it wasn't too in your face.
Yeah. Yeah, it complemented the scenes more than kind of took you out of what was happening with the momentum. But
I guess once... It's one of the things that really heightens the story as well. A good music score definitely makes a big difference.
It's a lot of people just don't realise how important the music is to something like this, but especially in this episode, which really it just turned into an action set piece for the last two parts.
Yeah.
So the music was really important here, and I think he pulled it off very well.
Yeah, and being a film student as well, you definitely understand, like...
Oh, well, you tend to appreciate this kind of stuff quite a lot.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, what did you think of McCoy's bird sounds that he was making throughout this episode? I don't think I'd ever seen that before.
That always cracked me up because I remember I saw this story a long time ago and I remember that, but he also brought it back in The Hobbit as well when he was playing Radagast the Brown. But it's quite funny that he brings in his sense of humour, like when he plays his spoons, that's something that he brought in because that's what Sylvester McCoy does. And now the Doctor does it as well, so...
It's really nice that he gets to put his own touch on a lot of these things, you know. He's got a bit of creative...
do.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great that they give these actors a bit of creative control with stuff like this.
I think, though, he did it more so than some of the other actors did. Like, I feel like as producers and directors came and went... Sylvester, I think, had more of an advantage to put his own into it. I think him and Matt Smith were probably the most up there, I guess, in putting themselves into the role, so to speak. Not to say that other doctors didn't, but they kind of put their own personality traits within the character.
Yeah, oh, well said.
Yeah.
I agree, and it really lifts it, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because sometimes... you're a writer. You write a lot of stuff yourself.
Yeah.
As you know, if you can't get the actor to bring their own qualities to the role, it just falls a bit flat, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Now, there's a massive revelation in this story. Once again, spoiler alert. We learn that Ace's grandmother is in this story and... Ace instructs her to go back to London, that her nan will be there, she'll look after her, but she doesn't realise that that was her nan that she sent off to London. And the baby, Audrey, is Ace's mother. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, initially my thoughts was I had no idea any of this was going on, because I remember when we were viewing this, I actually got up to get a glass of water and that whole part was said very quickly and I missed it.
Yeah.
And then at the end I was saying, what's going on? Why is she talking about this pain she's feeling with her mother and all this and that? And then you told us to rewind it. But then afterwards, oh, my God. You know, it was a bit shocking. So
yeah.
There you go. You can't avoid watching it for a minute.
Another thing with Ace in this episode, she had two really great standoff moments against the Doctor, which was really interesting to see. Like, they've been together for about... just over a season now, season and a half.
Yeah, season and a half.
And she just completely explodes in his face. And first time you've kind of seen that.
When I was watching that, it very much reminded me of what we're seeing in the current series now, where...
with Capaldi
Capaldi always having these massive arguments over different bits and pieces. So it very much reminded me of that. I'm wondering if that was a bit of a catalyst to what we're seeing in these modern episodes.
Yeah,
it's always hard to say, but that was a very cool moment. I wish they went a little bit more in depth with it, because it seemed like a bit of a passing thing, and then we didn't really hear much about it again later on the episode. But it was cool to see.
Yeah, I guess... adding on to that, the Virgin New Adventure novels that carried on from after the TV series into the early to mid-90s, they really kind of explored those darker elements, and then it ended up in Ace's last, or one of her last stories with the Seventh Doctor, that she just gave up on him because he became too much of a meddler in her life, that she was just a puppet.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And yeah, she left for someone else because she fell in love and she didn't want the doctor to control her life anymore.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, it was a very distorting way for her to leave for the first time.
Mm.
She does come back.
Mm.
But yeah, the way that they kind of played that down with the novels was really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I wasn't actually aware of that.
Yeah,
the novels,
the whole expanded universe of Doctor Who.
Oh, that's right, which our expert here, Tom, certainly knows plenty about. One of the reasons we also like to do this show is because Tom prides himself on knowing quite a lot about Doctor Who.
Mm.
So we have the expert's opinion, and then we also get my opinion, which I'm new to this Doctor Who universe. I've seen quite a few Doctors now.
You've been watching it since...
Oh, probably 2012 or 13.
Thereabouts, yeah.
But
2012.
Yeah, so when we review a lot of these classics, I'm seeing them for the first time. So at least you get someone's opinion who hasn't watched all these episodes before as well. So
it's a nice blend, I reckon.
Yeah, good perspective. And I must say, I was so disappointed when my beloved priest, Nicholas Parsons, didn't quite make it out alive.
He didn't. His faith had failed him.
Oh, my goodness.
And the two girls, their names escape me at the moment, but they all keep hinting, like, you don't believe it anymore. You're failing in your faith. And then he's going, oh, I live in my religion, but they're going, it's not the religion that we're talking about. It's the bombs that are over British soil. So... that's what failed him in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah. Got the better of him, and it was a really terrifying, slow, eerie type death, wasn't it? They all just went to put their hands on him, and he just fell into a pile of mud, which I thought was a bit disrespectful. You know, you couldn't get rid of the priest like that, surely.
No. There's more cleaner ways to get rid of a priest.
Oh, I know. I could not agree anymore.
Mm. Now, I guess, are there any other thoughts that you had on this story on a whole?
Oh, I mean, we haven't covered everything yet. There's a lot more we have to cover. The actual curse itself, written in the wall. And, of course, another thing that I loved, the Great Serpent. What do you think about the Great Serpent's appearance, Tom?
That revelation where he just rises out of the water.
Oh, my.
It's just fantastic. And the costume design that they went into that is just phenomenal. Oh. It was really noticeable, even with the hemivores as well.
It was interesting because I wasn't sure whether he was meant to look scary or whether he was meant to look really happy, because, to be honest, I just wanted to give him a hug.
He looked like he jumped out of a kid's show.
Yeah, that's right.
At one moment.
Yeah, you know.
But when he started to do evil things, he looked a bit more sinister.
That's right. He certainly got a bit more scary as the episode went on. But at first, I wanted to give him a bit of a friendly hug.
Come here.
Yeah, but no, he turned out to be pretty evil. And what a fitting end for him and the Russian general as well.
As Fenric.
Yes.
Yeah, it was one of those I'm taking you with me moments, which worked really well.
I mean, usually those moments could be a bit cliche.
Yeah.
But
it went with a nice flow with the story, yeah.
It worked out. And we got to talk about that gentleman who's on the Enigma machine. What was his name again, Tom? He was throughout the whole episode, and then he turned into Fenric at one point in time.
That was Dr. Judson.
Dr. Judson. What a name. Yeah, it was interesting with Dr. Judson because... it almost felt like we had two completely different performances from him. It was the pre-Fenric and the post when he got taken over.
Yeah.
He was excellent.
He was this kind of worried old man for like the first half of the story, but then when Fenric took over his body, it was like, the world is mine.
Those scary green eyes and...
yeah.
The mention of the Time Lords, and gee, it took a dark turn, didn't it?
It did. Another... thing that you mentioned there, we get all of these little cryptic things about the Doctor's backstory going on, and it's a nice play into Sylvester McCoy's Doctor. Like, we hear that in Remembrance of the Daleks a few times, and Silver Nemesis, and it happens a bit more in Survival and Battlefield.
They've always loved putting it all on a little drip feed, don't they? They never like to give too much away about him at one given time.
They don't want to give away all of the mystery because that would just...
Well, no, of course not. It'd ruin Doctor Who.
It would just be Doctor.
That's right. We'd know exactly who he is, whereas I like this drip feed type stuff they've got going, which the classics did ever so well.
Mm.
And I must say, if there's anything else that we have to talk about, and I'm sure there's plenty, it'd have to be this craziness, this massive ensemble cast.
Yeah.
That we had. We have to go back to that because, gee, they all pulled their role, didn't they?
Like Ghostlight, it was a really, really, I think probably even more, it was a solid cast.
Yeah.
Just everyone kind of just held it up together. I was saying it all the way through the story. Just, yeah, there wasn't a character that went to waste.
No, that's right. They all had their purpose and it all made for some excellent viewing.
Yeah.
And this is number two. This is the second DVD that is really, really hard to find.
In
Australia, you cannot find this at JB or...
Yeah, I'm holding the Region 2 copy right now and it's just hard to find.
Yeah, that's right. But as always, we were able to get a copy, weren't we? And thank goodness always we did. Always in the end,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, there's something about putting on a classic episode of Doctor Who on a DVD, sitting back...
There's a lot more authenticity to it.
Oh, there is too. Mm. Especially when you look at the collections and then you discuss all the good stories and the bad stories. And, you know, you can just talk about it for hours.
The good, the bad, the ugly, the whimsical, and the deliciously weird.
Oh, there's plenty of deliciously weird Happiness Patrol.
So I was just about to say
We must review that at some point.
Absolutely.
It'll have to come up. As always, if you have any... classic Doctor Who episodes, or stories rather, that you'd like Tom and I to review, please feel free to send us an email, comment on our videos on SoundCloud, YouTube, Apple Store, absolutely anything, and we'll certainly make sure to get onto it, won't we, Tom?
Absolutely. Now, it is time for the news. Now, this week we had Doctor Who Comics Day in the US of A and the UK. And Titan Comics have launched their 5-part series called Four Doctors by Paul Cornell, who has written the TV story Human Nature and Family of Blood, and a number of the BBC books and so on, the Big Finish audios. But this comic features John Hurt for a portion of time, Peter Capaldi and Matt Smith and David Tennant. And,
it's not a bad range you got there.
Yeah, so this is all in the one 5-part series. All of the Doctors in the comic range so far together. So I'll definitely be buying it. I don't know a huge amount about it. I know that one of the classic monsters, the Vord, are in it.
Now, what was the Vord from?
That was from The Keys of Marinus. That's a Hartnell story.
Oh, Hartnell, right.
But that's very, very little I know of it, so I'm very much going in blind.
Well, sometimes that's the best way to do it.
Absolutely.
Like I did with The Curse of Fenric. You just go in, don't want to read the plot, don't want to know anything. I just want to go in, have a look, have a watch, have a gander.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the best way to do it.
Yeah. And we found out this week there's a casting update on Star Wars.
On Star Wars? The episode 7?
Yes.
Right. Could it be anything Doctor Who related by any chance?
It could be, Ben.
Could it really?
Yes.
Could it possibly be, I don't know, Tom Baker?
Yes, the flipping is.
Oh my goodness, high five.
Oh my giddy ass.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's exciting.
Yeah, he was in an interview and he just said in passing, I'm doing a voiceover for Star Wars this afternoon. Yeah, it should be good.
My goodness, that's worlds colliding, isn't it?
It is.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I have seen all Star Wars films, obviously.
Yes.
Quite recently, actually, I rewatched them all, or watched them all for the first time, rather. Oh my God, yeah, I just said that.
But, this is a Doctor Who podcast.
But, that's right. But has there been any prior people from Doctor Who in Star Wars before, or is this a bit of a first?
Peter Cushing was in Star Wars. He was in episode 4, I believe, but he also played Doctor Who in Doctor Who and the Daleks and Dalek Invasion of Earth 2150 AD, which were the two 60s movies that were adaptations of the TV episodes.
Ah, that's very cool.
Yes.
There you go.
They're quite a romp. They're more of a kids' film than a sci-fi film. But that was because the Daleks were such a big sellout during the 60s and they
still wanted, today.
Wanted to do something with the market at that time, so they made two movies.
Jeez, there you go.
Yeah. In other news...
Surely there must be something else. There's always something happening in this Who universe every single
week. There is. Yeah. Big Finish Productions have started producing... Torchwood audios. They have the rights to Torchwood.
Ah, so spin-off, nice.
So they've got John Barrowman as Captain Jack.
Yeah, Harkness, beautiful. Yeah,
and Gareth David Lloyd as Ianso Jones. And yeah, that's all we know so far. It's all very cryptic, but Big Finish is slowly getting the rights to all of this new series stuff. We've got Torchwood. We've got the new series unit team, so Kate Stewart and Osgood have their own unit season against the Autons.
It's all just very exciting, isn't it? Especially combining old with new as well.
Exactly.
That's a real...
What I'm really looking forward to is hearing River Song with the Eighth Doctor in the second installment of Doom Coalition.
Oh, I know. You'd be hanging for that.
Yeah. I love my Eighth Doctor, as we... said in the previous podcast.
Yeah, for those who listen to this show regularly, you're going to know just how much Tom loves Paul McGann. And you've met Paul McGann, too.
I have. He's a splendid chap.
Yeah, it's a fantastic photo, which we'll have to put on the site at some point.
I remember I had a good chat to him about Melbourne culture and cafes and hipsterism. It was a good 10 minutes.
Oh, that would have been fantastic.
Yes, also in news, we have the novelisation of City of Death, which is a Tom Baker story, which was from a story idea by Douglas Adams and David Fisher. If you don't know, Douglas Adams is the mastermind behind The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
And that's been adapted by James Goss, who's a Doctor Who and Torchwood writer. But that's something that's in all good book retailers at the moment, so I get hold of a copy of that, I'm going to get hold of a copy.
There's always something, isn't there?
There is always
every
something.
Every single week we have maybe a new episode. Well, September's coming around the corner.
It is.
And we have new audios, books, novels, comics.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And pretty soon, once Series 9 comes out, we're going to have a range of new Peter Capaldi novels. As the 12th Doctor, so those are the Big Bang Generation, Deep Time, and Royal Blood.
I must say, it's excellent. They've really gone all out with Capaldi, haven't they? They've backed him 100%.
They
all the
have.
Merchandise, everything, and it's paid off for them for good reason.
Yeah.
Great
and
performances.
They're really delivering the fan service at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great... There's no better time to be a Doctor Who fan, is there? With 50 years of history and archives.
It's so good.
It's exciting. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we said earlier, if there is a classic episode of Doctor Who that you'd like us to review, a classic story, whatever that may be, please let us know, comment, send us an email, a message, whatever you like, and hopefully between Tom and I, we will have it in our collection. If we don't, we'll go out and get it. We'll make sure to. And Tom, I must say, I love McCoy dearly.
Mm.
But I think we should try a different doctor for the next one.
I think so too. Now, before we finish up here, out of 10, where would you rate the story?
Out of 10, look, there was so much I loved about this episode personally, and it's not just the fact that Nicholas Parsons is in it. That was certainly something I loved. But, look, I'm trying to think of what I could fault about it, and I'm coming up with absolutely nothing. It was really cool to see so much action in a story of Doctor Who, but I'm going to have to give it an 8, I think.
I reckon I need to give it a 9.
A 9?
A 9.
You and I can never agree.
That is astronomical for me.
That's incredible. So, you're giving it a 9. Where would this rank in Sylvester McCoy's run from 1987 to 89?
It will be one of his best, I reckon.
Oh,
up there,
have to be in the top 3.
Up there with Remembrance of the Daleks.
Another awesome story.
The greatest show in the galaxy.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about the psychic circus, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So if you haven't seen this episode, we both agree, we recommend it. Go out.
It has a Who's to Review seal of approval.
It does.
Yes.
Can you blame us? No, not at all. It was a fantastic episode.
If you do, you can consult our lawyers.
Yeah, that's right. So, where to next? We're going to have to travel into the DVD collection.
Yes.
And we're going to have to travel back in time. We might watch a Hartnell episode next. We might watch a Tom Baker.
We're just going to pick one off the shelf and go with it.
That's right. We're just going to have a great time doing so, aren't we?
Yes, indeed.
So until then, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Who's to Review. I've been Ben Holt.
I've been Tom Denham.
He has been Tom Denham. And without further ado, we hope you have a fantastic weekend, day, night, evening, and really, just enjoy yourself on this earth. That's what it's all about.
Have a great one.
Yeah, enjoy. Thank you.